This Week in Free Energy.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
From freeenergynews.com, the PES Network brings you this show each week, a one-hour live interview with some of the leading energy inventors and technologies out there. Today we are joined by Leslie Szabo, an associate professor formerly with a university in Hungary. And he has over in Bulgaria right now, there's a demonstration going on, a laboratory demonstration where they are allowing in an open house fashion individuals to come into their laboratory 3 days a week and to view the technology. And he also has a testing protocol for people who wish to put their instruments to the device. And according to the instrumentation that they have, they are measuring a small degree of overunity, meaning the amount of energy coming out of the system is slightly more than the amount of energy that went into it in the first place. And they extrapolate mathematically according to existing formulas of electronics that if they will go to a larger size, such as a 1.5 megawatt size and upward, that they will be in a sufficient size that the outcoming energy could be fed back into the system, and using forces of electromagnetics, they would then be harnessing the Earth's magnetic properties to be able to provide an output, a net output that could be sold to the grid or for whatever purpose, either as torque or as electricity, and it also generates some heat that can be used. For example, in a 15 megawatt output, 5 of that or so is going to be heat, 10 is usable electricity, and just a little bit, 1 to 10% will be fed back into the machine to keep it running. Now, bear in mind that these are extrapolations to self-running. They do not have a self-running machine right now. Professor Szabo, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome.
You are in Toronto right now visiting family. Your company's over there
Budapest.
What's the name? Budapest, Hungary.
That's right.
Yeah.
There is a slight mistake in the introduction. It's not in Bulgaria, it's in Hungary.
Yes, I said Bulgaria, didn't I? It is,
yeah.
Hungary.
Yeah, it's in Budapest, in Hungary.
Right. Well, you've been at this for 20 years, and you've been keeping it really tight to your chest, having really strict NDAs. When did you first notice an, quote, over-unity scenario in your sciences? Was it at the very beginning of the 20 years of research? When did you see that show up?
Well, actually, it happened on the 3rd of November, 1992. That was the time, and it happened in one of the four laboratories in Budapest, and that was the beginning when we measured over unity.
You have two statements, certified statements, on your website. From one of them is from a group out of Toronto that includes a university professor, and from an, he's in a university right now as a professor, and the other one is a vice president of a energy company there in New Folk, and they tested it and they certified that it was performing as claimed. And you have a group of five scientists from a university there in Hungary, four of which are professors. One holds a PhD. The other one that's not a professor is a PhD, and they all sign off on it as well. So that, of course, turns some heads. I must tell you that the way your website reads had me going a little more excited than I should have been at first, thinking that you already had self-reining system, not realizing that that is an extrapolation that you were talking about. So, you know, that's kind of the way it was presented when I first put this in our news, got a lot of people excited about that. And so there's been a little bit of a dampening of that excitement to find out that you're not yet in the self-running prototype stage and that these commercial units you plan on selling are actually, you think they will be over unity based on the math, but you have not yet proven that by an existing device. Do I have that correct?
No. You don't have it. And if you allow me, I will explain that. In order to be able to be over unity, the only thing that you have to measure is that the difference between the input and the output. And if you have a larger output than what you have input in totality, then you are over unity. And let me just go back to your lead-up expression. The five professors out of four of them are in Hungary, one of them in Germany, and the fellows from Canada, one of them is Professor Varma at the University of Western Ontario, that's in London, Ontario, south of Toronto. The other fellow is Bruno Cicciotelli, that's an Italian name. He's Vice President Engineering and Operations at Norfolk Utility, Power Utility. From the southern Ontario. Those two gentlemen are from Canada. The other five are four from Europe. The percentage of over unity, which has been certified by Mr. Cicciotelli and Professor Varma, had 75% over unity.
What percent?
75%. If you enlarge the statutory declaration by clicking, you can see enlarged, and it's about 6 and 7 kilowatt, and it's been over 24 kilowatt, so it's about 75% over unity. The other test that they actually been running at the same time is about 6% over unity. And those are the basic way of measuring, as I indicated, is by subtraction of input-output. And that's the way to define over unity.
I'm curious,
with respect to the extrapolation, in order to conduct actual tests designing larger units, we have designed 14 larger units ranging from 1.5 megawatts to 150 megawatts. We had to start the testing with a very small unit, which is referred to as the BB Lego unit in our company. The second one is the C4 unit, and we have two larger units, but we refer to as 720 units. And it turns out to be that it is the weight of the laminated steel that which goes into the manufacturing of these units, which actually determining the over unity, the size of the over unity. So when you plot, for example, over unity in kilowatts against the weight of the laminated steel, what we call the electro steel, then you can measure up on your chart a nice mathematical curve, and that is the one we have used to design the units, beginning from, as I indicated, from 1.5 meg to 150 meg in size. Those are the sellable electric power as well as the heat energy.
Have you sold any of these commercial units yet to build on that scale?
Well, we have 1.5 meg units. They have a large order pending. We have signed contracts with one of the large manufacturing company in the Ukraine. They have the railway of Federation of the Russian Federation, and they are now changing the engines of the locomotives, and that's the one which they are going to use, the 1.5 meg size, and the order is fairly substantial.
When is that expected to be completed?
The very first unit is going to be about 12 months time, and we don't get into the mass production until the first few units are tested at the manufacturing site.
Is this a manufacturing site? Do they have an exclusive on the manufacturing, or are you still open for licensing for manufacturing from other entities?
Well, we have licensed two other manufacturers, and we have from the United States, we have two companies negotiating for manufacturing licenses, and I hope to initial one of them before I leave back to Budapest in about 2 weeks' time.
Just on a side note, as we mentioned earlier, you're in Toronto right now. You originated in Hungary, and then you moved to Toronto how many years ago?
Well, it was a little bit different. First, I was employed by the research establishment in London, England. And then we moved to Edmonton, Alberta, where I first became the director of the Public Utilities Board in Edmonton. And then I established my own consulting company, and we have been in the consulting for pipelines, telephone companies, electric power, gas companies for a number of years. We have implemented the contracts in the United States, Canada, in South America, and also in Europe, valued at about $30 billion U.S. in totality. And then I have been requested to head up that R&D, which is now being discussed.
Now, if I remember right from our earlier conversations, you are the inventor. Your name is on the patent on this. Is that correct?
Yes, I am the one. Yeah. I committed that invention.
Mm-hmm. And you have, I know, one patent. I've seen it, an international or world patent. Do you have other patents as well?
During the R&D era, we have been applying for patents, and ultimately we ended up obtaining, I think, 14 patents. One of them is in the United States, and also applied for in totality in 42 countries. And the reason that we did this, because we wanted to protect the development stage, because we have had four laboratories, one in Houston, Texas, one in Toronto, one in London, England, and ultimately back in Budapest in Hungary. And when you have such a diversity, not knowing when you would stumble on the final entity, the final shape of the electromagnetic field, having so many employees scattered on two continents, that we decided to file patents as we did go along with the development, the R&D development, and 80% of the GDP of the globe. That's the one where we put the patents in for those countries. Patents don't actually protect anybody because they can scout. They have scouted for in the patent offices, and at very early stages, we learned from the patent lawyers that it's a temporary protection. So we decided to wait until we have hopefully developed the one which has over unity, because obviously we didn't know at the very beginning that we are going to succeed, but we nevertheless filed the patent, and this is why we ended up in 42 countries. We decided to do the patenting for the commercial unit if and when it will come around. At that time, we didn't know that the timing of it. And in the meantime, we had the trademark protection, which is infinite and is not geographically located. So we do have a trademark protection, and we're going to file patents for the final shape for the commercial unit.
It dawns on me that we have not yet mentioned the name of your company and the name of the technology. Energy by Motion is the name of the device, and your company is Gamma Management, is that correct?
Yes. Gamma Management, Gamma Manager, KFT, which is equivalent with the LTD Limited. And that's in Hungary.
Mm-hmm.
We have had the Gamma Manager, an engineering company back in Edmonton in Alberta, Canada, which had 400 professionals doing nothing else but advising large utility companies and appearing before various tribunals as expert witnesses on depreciation, rate of return, revenue requirements, and you name it, we had it for those electric power companies, gas, pipeline, telephone companies, which I mentioned a minute ago.
For those who are listening live right now, we do have call-in phone numbers that you can call in to ask questions of Leslie Szabo. The phone number in the United States toll-free is 877-876-5227, and if you're in Canada, you can call 888-810-8322, or you can call directly from outside of the U.S. or Canada by dialing 1-530-876-3222. Again, we have Professor Leslie Szabo with us. He is in Toronto. He heads up a company out of Hungary called Gamma Manager, and they have a product called Energy by Motion that has been certified by two independent university-based groups who have said it is indeed running over unity. It's a small amount right now in the smaller unit, but by taking the different three sizes you have, is that correct? Three different sizes of prototypes, you've been able to establish a weight of the laminates versus percentage of over unity, and by extrapolating that forward, you are guessing that by the time you get to the size of 1.5 megawatts, that you will have a unit that will produce adequate to keep itself running and have enough left over to be useful for sale.
Yes, the 1.5 megawatts is the size which is competitive when it comes down to what is the price, the tariff per kilowatt hour. Much smaller units will be self-running by, and we can determine it by the weight of the steel that we are employing in the unit. The 1.5 magic number is the one when it is producing power, that is energy, sellable energy at competitive rate. And the larger the unit, it's becoming more and more competitive. So I just wanted to explain that the 1.5 meg magic number is not self-running and self-sufficient before that, but it's not competitive size-wise.
It is competitive.
At 1.5 meg, yes.
Mm-hmm. And the 1.5 is the net energy that is usable, is that correct?
We always quote the net electric sellable energy, and in addition to it, we have additional heat at up to 95 degrees centigrade, which can be utilized either for heating purposes or for chilling. So when we say 1.5 meg, for example, it means that it is net, and it means electric. And in addition to it, there are heat available up to 95 degrees centigrade, and that is available also can be sold.
And this technology would require no input of fuel. You're not adding any kind of petrol. You're not adding any kind of a nuclear fuel. You're not adding water. The thing just sits there and runs from what?
Well, the fuel is electromagnetic flux, or short magnetic flux. It's either provided from outside or when we are producing electric power, then a small percentage of that is recycled, maintaining the electromagnetic flux.
And I asked you in a previous conversation, apparently the exact method that you envision for how this works is protected proprietarily right now. But can I ask you, on a scale of 1 to 10, how clearly do you think you have worked out the theory of how this works according to existing laws or laws that you have discovered? How sure are you that you have it figured out of how this thing is working on a physics basis?
Oh, we have had very large number of scientists working on in the four labs. And in our archives, we have truckloads of information with respect to all the reports of the research and development phase. So we know it inside out. This is why it took so long. We didn't want to come out to the open until we have dotted the I's and crossed the T's, meaning that we had to get the design section after when we were ascertained that we are producing over unity. Then we have had the classical engineering section started to do the designing of the unit, and the reason for that is that we had to have the manufacturers to obtain the detailed design documentation, and they have been able to quote prices and deliveries for us. That was absolutely necessary for pricing out the kit that sent the KWH for both electric power as well as for the heat. And this is what actually happened, that we do have the equations, we do have the engineering design, so we have and it's why it took so long.
In the 20 years you've been pursuing this, how many, let's say, scientists, people who come from academia or from a profession such as the utilities, people who have credentials as scientists in the field of energy, how many would you say have been involved in developing the technology, in testing the technology, in reviewing it?
Now, the Toronto lab, for example, had over 40 people.
Which lab was that?
That was a lab in Toronto next to the airport.
And that was, those were all working on this one project?
Yes, obviously, yes. So we had roughly about 120, 140 people of the scientific community been working in the four labs ultimately. I'm just citing the one in Toronto, which is which was one of the important labs. So we have had a large number of people from the universities, physics, math, computer scientists, classical engineering from various manufacturing companies. Some of them were borrowed for 1 or 2 years, and they've been working on this simultaneously.
In the business plan that a person who signs an NDA to be involved, how much of this information do you disclose, such as the number of people that are involved, even some of the names of the people and entities that have been involved? Do you disclose it all to those who come under an NDA?
What is NDA?
Non-disclosure agreement.
Oh, I see. All right. We do not divulge the name of the scientist when somebody comes to table. Our table, we have designed with our legal consultants a series of contracts. They are all printed up licenses, and we have a procedure how to go about discussing and testing the units for the serious potential buyers of either the master's licensing for distributorship, and we have a separate one for manufacturing. The manufacturing licenses are global, and the distributorships are geographically located. And those are all available. If somebody comes to us and say, as we have had several times, that they would like to know how to proceed, then we have a standard procedure laid out for them. If they stay into the territory where we do not wish to divulge information, then we just indicated to them that this is the territory that we cannot divulge. For example, if somebody wanted to know the details of how does it work, we said we can't say that to you, but you can come to our lab, bring yourself appropriate scientific personnel, engineering personnel, to evaluate, and there is a 3-page procedure. I think you have received it from me yesterday, how to test the units in the lab.
Yeah.
It sets out, but then when they actually asking proprietary information or asking names of the scientists, we can't divulge it to them.
Mm-hmm. The
I
number
mean, they
gave...
do meet some of them when they come to the measuring station, and you know, obviously when we have the hello.
Yeah. That's Zenny has joined us on the line to do the weekly show on how to reduce our energy footprint on the planet. We'll turn the time over briefly to her, and then we'll pick back up with this conversation.
All right. Oh, hi, Sterling.
Hi, Zenya.
Yes, the time is now. Global consumption of our natural resources of coal, oil, and natural gas is at record levels and continues to increase as our population grows daily. In the USA, the average person consumes about 340 million BTU footprints of energy over a year. The only real alternative is through living a more sustainable lifestyle on a smaller BTU footprint on the planet. Unfortunately, the U.S. is by far the largest worldwide contributor to global warming, releasing about a third of the world's carbon dioxide emissions. America has the technological know-how and the resources to move away from dependence on oil and other fossil fuels for a cleaner, more secure, new energy future. So the time is now to wean America from this BTU addiction and head down a more sustainable path. There are plans going on right now to organize Oil Addicts Anonymous groups. Oil Addicts Anonymous groups is a neat, to have a new energy future. PIRG stands for Public Interest Research Group. They have teamed up with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Energy Star program to educate the people how to save energy and help the environment. The Arizona PIRG is working to make sure Arizona uses our energy efficiently for a responsible energy future. They have a petition on the internet right now that can be signed that will be delivered to the Arizona Corporation Commission for them to vote for the state to reap the economic and environmental benefits of solar, wind, clean biomass, geothermal, and other renewable energy sources for clean energy for years to come. Who is the Arizona Corporation Commission? They're a board of elected officials who regulate electric utilities and make the decisions. They work together with the governor and the state legislature and have taken some steps to promote clean renewable energy by adopting a 15% renewable energy standard. So it is a start. This will increase our use of renewable energy resources, will protect public health and preserve and protect our environment, improve rural economics and provide more zero pollution and increase our energy independence and our own power supply. So we must make our voices heard. So to make sure our leaders take action on opportunities of energy efficiency standards and set us on a path to a safer, cleaner energy future of renewable energy. To learn more, you can go to websites such as the Climate Crisis, climatecrisis.com. Also, an Inconvenient Truth website, that's the Al Gore movie. And if you haven't seen it yet, please get the DVD. And also check out energystar.com. Okay?
Thank you very much, Zenya.
And blessings.
Okay. And Leslie, we're back to what you were talking about in when people come to you and want to get involved in the company, kind of what is involved in that process.
Yeah.
So kind of to jump back to what we were talking about earlier, I asked a question about how many people you would estimate have been involved total in the 20 years that you've been pursuing this. I did hear correctly that you had 40 people working in your lab in Toronto. I didn't catch the number of total people that you would estimate have been involved.
Well, it's over 120 altogether. Those are the scientific staff. And when we say scientific, we included the engineering personnel as well.
Mm-hmm.
But those are physicists, math, computer scientists, and engineering personnel, materials, those are the ones that were involved.
These people who have been involved, obviously, you know, my exposure to this field is that the first response when presented with the possibility of an over-unity scenario is one of skepticism and disbelief that you're actually doing something which would seem to violate the current laws or understanding of physics. These people who you get involved and who work with the project, how do they respond generally to the technology? Do they walk away impressed, or is it hard to convince them?
Well, actually, when we had somebody to come aboard, it was a requirement that they had an open mind, and many turned down and didn't join us. We only have taken those on board who had an open mind, appropriate qualification, and that was the only requirement. The ones that they didn't have open mind, we asked them to say it so at the very beginning, and they didn't come aboard.
Okay, so you screened out those who would maybe have a negative outlook to begin with, and you went with those who have an open mind. But even among those who have an open mind, I would consider myself to have an open mind. You know, if you claim to have something and you say you have a working prototype or you have a feasible plan, you know, I'll take a look at it and see what you have. And if after looking at it, you know, then I make a determination as to whether or not, you know, how valuable or accurate the testing and the claims are. And so I guess the question is, of these people that after you screen them and they've come aboard, they get involved with you, what is their response after being involved in the project? Are they convinced, or generally speaking, or are they still wondering? Or what's the level of, conversion to the claims that you're making?
Up until the 3rd of November 1992, it was an uphill battle because we had nothing myself. I didn't have anything in my hand. And obviously we couldn't have been showing anything to anybody, any proof. But after when we had the first indication on that date, it actually changed quite a bit because we all suspected that something must have been wrong with the actual measurement. And after when we had tested it several times, we gave it to the various labs. We have duplicated the baby Lego unit to the labs. And they devised a very easy way of producing a yes or no. Then after that date, it became much easier to everybody within the organization had something to work for. Before that, it was pretty difficult, even for myself.
In this demonstration that you have, that people can come see in Hungary right now, you know, you've got announced on the homepage at gammamanager.com, is that correct?
Yes, correct, yeah.
When people go to that website, I believe it's on the homepage, you have this notice of this open house and the invitation to come check it out. And I'm curious, when people who are open-minded but are going to want to be satisfied through their measurements that you have what you claim you have, what kind of tools do you recommend that they bring with them? And how long is it going to take for them to be able to test and to be satisfied that you have what you say you have? In your documentation that you faxed me last night, the 3 pages of explanation of the testing procedure, it wasn't necessarily a specific procedure of, put your instrument here, but you did talk about periods of time that would be required to measure certain things. So let's say that I was to make a trip to Hungary tomorrow, and what equipment would I be bringing with me, and how long would I be there, and what would I be measuring to walk away convinced?
Okay, fair enough. There are 2 classes of visitors we expect, and we have been expecting these 2 classes. One, somebody's coming and just wanted to kick the tire, look at it and see that beautiful, that's very nice. And the other class is the one who are potential partners, and then they have to go through a procedure whereby there is a pre-agreement has to be signed, and they have to come and bring with them appropriate experts, and the experts are examined by us and say that your experts are okay, your experts are something desirable, bring somebody else, and after we settled that 1, 2, or 3, or sometimes 5 would come, and they have to go through a lecture series, and we have to indicate to them the actual testing procedure, as well as the math, the physics, so they understand how we're going to test it. And during that time,
do they go under non-disclosure?
That's the number one that they have to do. Even those who are entering the lab, they have to sign a non-disclosure, even if they are not potential partners. You see.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to sign it as soon as they enter, before they enter the door. If any of the lab in Budapest, they have to sign a non-competition and non-disclosure agreement. And after they did it, then we already know that they are potential either investors or potential partners, and they actually have to sign a pre-agreement saying, the pre-agreement is actually saying that this is what we claim. And if you, after testing the unit with your experts that have to go through the lecture series and testing, that they are qualified to do the testing, then there is a proviso in the pre-agreement saying that if the units do provide and you have the proof that our claim is correct, then the next step is that how are we going to become partners, and if we have to sign that agreement. So the second class, or the class of the potential partners, are more rigorous. They have to go through all these procedures. The ones that they just come around and to kick the tire, that's easy. They just have to sign the non-disclosure, non-compete agreements, and they come around, we show them, we open up the electronics to show them. They cannot use cameras, and there is no testing for them.
Now, there would actually be a third class, and that would be something that we as the New Energy Congress would represent, and that is, we're not coming in as potential partners, but we are coming in to validate for the sake of our coverage. We have a listing of top 100 energy technologies, and we want to be able to say, yes, we have tested this, and it performed as claimed, And here is our measurement report. Here's how we did it. Here's what we got. Here's our data. And we conclude that this technology works as claimed, or there may be some caveats. There may be some statements of doubt or question. In other words, you know, our purpose in coming in would not be to go into business with you, but to check you out as a sort of public screening mechanism to say we give our stamp of approval that this company is doing what they claim to be doing, that their technology is at such and such a level. And so that would be a third class and would be kind of halfway between the rigor of the first class and the second class that you talked about, because we're not actually entering into a business relationship with you. Our purpose is to inspect the technology and to verify that the claims are as said. And so let's go with that scenario. Let's say that somebody, you know, let's say a member of the New Energy Congress, and we actually have two individuals associated with the Congress who were planning on either themselves going or they had an associate who could go on behalf of the Congress. If we were to come in, what would we be seeing? What would we? How long would we need, and what kind of instruments would we need to bring?
Yeah, let me just explain to you. Before we enter into such an arrangement, at least one person would have to come face to face with us, sit down with them, and we work it out. What's the purpose? They're going to identify the background and so forth. Then when we come to the conclusion that it is to the mutual benefit of accepting this proposal, then we would recommend to bring the following instruments with themselves, or lease or rent from the Academy of Sciences out of Hungary or Austria or anywhere else the following instruments. We would bring them to the lab to toy around first of all, and then finalize the arrangement. But we would not let anybody in and do anything of that kind before we sit down with at least one person face to face, discuss it, and then have an agreement.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about at least two visits. One would be a preliminary visit to see whether or not your company approves of this type of inspection, and the second would be to actually come in and do the inspection.
Correct, yes, correct.
Are you talking about a period of you know, we're getting into some specifics here, and maybe we shouldn't bother the entire audience with what should be a private conversation. So let's get back to a general question.
All right.
And let's talk about, let's say, for example, somebody, a potential partner, the second class that you talked about, that wants to go into business with you, they want to check it out, and they want to measure it with an expert of their choosing and of your approval, that you agree that the expert has the level of knowledge and expertise required to be able to know what he's seen and be able to do an appropriate test. That has happened. Well, first of all, that screening process, does that take a day? Does it take a few hours? How long does that take?
It should take only a day. It is not something very, very long. We sit down, and we have had bad experience with somebody trying to come and had experts with not open mind, and there was obviously no reason why we should subject our technology to such a type of inquiry. And then we flatly said to the gentleman that we are not available to do that. We also have had earlier two or three certifications by university professors out from Scotland, from Europe. So that's not the only certification that we have had, which we put up on the website this time we have had before, and some people said that this is quite adequate. I don't want to bring experts. Others said that's very nice that you have had these certifications. They talked to some of the experts that they had performed the experimentation and the certification, and they said, all right, we still want to bring somebody. We said, fine, do that. This is the procedure. We have to examine the person. They have an open mind, because this is a very esoteric subject matter, and obviously we don't want to waste their time. We don't want to waste our time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's say somebody has gone through the one day of training / screening, and you've now approved them to go in and test. How long does the testing take?
Well, we don't have self-running units, so if we had self-running units, it would take only half an hour to do the testing.
Mm-hmm.
Since we don't have, we have to measure all the heat produced. We have to measure the electric power produced. We have to measure the leakage that is coming out from the heat box, which is being produced by the unit. And this is why it is taking, it could take 36 hours, for example. This is on the average for the largest unit, for the 720 unit. Or if it is already warmed up earlier, then it would take about 24 hours to do the testing. And prior to getting into the lecture series, we provide up to 22 booklets describing the math physics, and this is after we have the preliminary fee agreement signed, and this is for potential partners. So when they come to the lecture series, they already have had the chance to go through about 22 EBM booklets.
Mm-hmm.
Those are heavy math physics and so on. Those are not for light-hearted people.
How many, if I may ask, how many people so far, how many groups, entities, have gone through this procedure where they've actually wanted to go into business and they went through this process that that you just described?
Well, there are well over 25, 26 of them. And out of these, we have partners now signed agreements with us, distributorship agreements, manufacturing agreements, that is licenses. And for the locomotives in Russia, we have the 1.5 meg unit. We have sold licenses for Europe. In some countries, we sold licenses for Northern Ontario. We sold the license for the whole of Canada. We sold licenses for the rest of the Danube in Hungary, as well as on the east side of the Danube in Hungary. So we have been fairly successful so far.
Now, we've not talked yet about the practical cents per kilowatt hour output once we have the installation, manufacturer, maintenance cost tabulated. And from what I've read and from our conversations, you're estimating that once you have these self-running units of the larger size, you're estimating that to be between 2 and 5 cents, 2 and 6 cents per kilowatt hour, which is well within the range of wholesale grid electricity pricing. And you actually even admitted to me the point is that price may even be a little bit purposely high, because you don't want this technology to be a disruptive technology. You want to be able to make a smooth transition from the existing energy modality of coal and oil and et cetera, and you want to be able to shift to a new technology without being perceived as being too much of a competitor and maybe being knocked off or whatever. So you're being polite, as it were. Is that correct?
No, we have been in the utility business consulting for utility companies for the past 35, 40 years. We are at home in the boardrooms. We know that we have to leave profit margin for the utility companies when they come and become partners of ours, and obviously this is what we are going to do. So they still have to have a certain profit margin, otherwise then, so it's a correct statement what you indicated, that we don't want to produce a disruptive technology, and therefore, but still there is lots of room between the current tariff rates as well as making the profit a profit margin. So when we say that we can produce with a 225 meg unit, which is a 3 times 75 meg unit, producing three-phase electric power, for the actual cost of that size is much different than when you are using a standalone 1.5 meg unit. So the difference between the actual cost of producing 1 kWh with a 1.5 meg unit and producing the same thing with a 225 meg unit is very different.
Yeah. And let me just remind, we're at the end of our time here, but this technology that you are discussing here, once you have your self-running unit, this is not sun-dependent, it's not weather-dependent, it's not wind-dependent. It runs 24/7, 365 without stopping, except maybe for some maintenance once in a while of bearings and whatnot. And it's producing electricity at a price point that is comparable to and possibly superior to existing energy technologies. And so we could continue with our present pricing of energy and get off fossil fuels completely. Is that correct?
This is what it is, yes.
Yeah. Well, Professor Szabo, it's been a pleasure talking to you. We appreciate you joining us. This will be on the archives available at bbsradio.com. Also, our website is freeenergynow.net, where you can see a listing of upcoming and past shows. Archives will be linked there. We are grateful to the BBS Radio for hosting this. And join us each day at freeenergynews.com for stories like this as they develop. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and I would like to receive, if you tape that discussion, because I didn't tape it, but if you did it, then please send a copy.
Be glad to. Thanks again.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.